Well, let's turn to sports now, and two things that happened last night that really highlight both the great and the awful aspects of Boston sports history. Now, in the greatness category, the Celtics' Isaiah Thomas poured in a glorious 53 points last night in Boston's 129-119 overtime victory against the Wizards in Game 2 of the Eastern Conference semifinals. Thomas said he did it for his sister, who died last month, because yesterday would have been her 23rd birthday. Now, on the other end, the awful end of the spectrum, last night Red Sox fans gave a standing ovation to the Orioles' Adam Jones. But this was after some fans hurled racist taunts at Jones during Monday night's game at Fenway Park. But as Commonwealth Magazine notes, standing up for Jones may make Sox fans feel better about themselves, but it doesn't do much at all to heal the deep old wound that is Boston and its sports team's history with racism. So joining us now with more is Shira Springer, WBOR sports and society reporter. Good to see you again, Shira.
Hello.
Also with us is Howard Bryant, senior writer for ESPN and author of Shutout, a story of race and baseball in Boston. Howard, it's good to have you back again.
Just like yesterday.
I know. Some stories will need constant care and attention here in Boston, let's be honest. Now, Shira, first of all, I just want to, you were at the Red Sox game last night, so we'll start with the Sox and end with the Celtics here. what was it like last night when that standing ovation happened?
Well, it was very moving, and I think, you know, the nice thing that happened was that Red Sox pitcher Chris Sale sort of stepped off the mound and let Adam Jones really relish the moment and let it sort of the cheers build a bit. I think at first there might have been a little bit of hesitation, like, and then you could hear the cheers building and people getting onto their feet. It wasn't a total standing ovation, but it came somewhat close.
Yeah. Well, we actually have some tape here of that moment. And this, again, is Adam Jones, or the sound of what happened when Adam Jones made his first appearance at the plate last night.
Adam Jones.
Shira and Howard, it's interesting because when you hear that, I mean, maybe it was different as people were watching. I mean, the cheering isn't instantaneous. And did I hear some booing in there, too?
It did. I think it's depended on where you were in the arena and who you were standing next to and who was surrounding you, cheering around me. But I think that, yeah, there were probably some people who are like, wait a second, we're cheering an opposing player. I mean, even though Mookie Betts, an outfielder for, you know, the Red Sox, said, hey, stand up for Adam Jones, you know, stand up against racism, I think people were a little reluctant. At least some fans I talked to were a little reluctant about cheering an opposing player.
Okay, I'm going to come back to that in a second. Mm-hmm. But Howard, is it meaningful at all that there was this response to Jones last night?
Well, sure, it's meaningful because the response, because people were watching what the response was going to be, and it's one of those situations where you might not be able to make it better, but you could certainly make it worse, depending on how they reacted. And I think that what's actually more significant is that the Red Sox are contemplating, which I don't think they should, I think they should enact it, which is a lifetime ban for anybody who is caught making racist remarks at the ballpark. I think that it's an extreme response. But it's as we discussed yesterday, this franchise has a problem, and sometimes you have to be a little extreme to deal with specific problems. This is something that is affecting, I don't know if it's affecting their bottom line, but it certainly is something that has affected the team's legacy. It has been part of their legacy. So I think that more important than the moment when Adam Jones stepped into the batter's box, that the Red Sox seem to recognize after all these years that maybe it's time to actually really do something.
Yeah. Shira, let me ask you a little bit more about what you were saying earlier about fan reaction and some fans still feeling a little conflicted about cheering or supporting Jones simply because he's playing for the Orioles?
Yeah, I mean, that's, I think, a typical Boston reaction
in some
way. Yeah,
but isn't that necessary?
You want them to be bigger than all of that, right?
It lays bare the underlying problem, right?
Well, I think, you know, all the fans that I spoke to, and this was not a scientific survey by any stretch, but, you know, just casually talking to them, listen, they thought that the gesture was a nice way to apologize to Adam Jones. But they also were like, it kind of made them a little uncomfortable because don't forget, Red Sox fans are among the most diehard and sort of stalwart of sports fans, and it's their team or no team, and it just sort of made them a little bit uncomfortable to see a partial standing ovation for somebody on the other team.
Well, I wonder what both...
There's something else going on there, too. I mean, let's also not forget what else is going on. It's one of my favorite clichés, Shira, as you well know, but these two teams don't like each
yes.
other for paying attention to what has been going on the past week with the slide going on with Manny Machado sliding into
going back all the way to last April, April 21st.
Exactly.
Yeah, but here's what I wonder. I mean, there can be team rivalries and deep distaste for anyone who's not in a Red Sox uniform, but like that kind of tribalism just masks or excuses, I would say, a lot of fans' unwillingness to recognize that there's a problem here. I mean, don't you, as Shear was trying to get to before I cut you off, like, wouldn't you rather have fans stand up and say, yeah, Jones may play for the Orioles, but it doesn't matter because the bigger point right now is that Boston has to get past its racist
past. We'd like to think that some issues are bigger than sports and that fans can recognize it, but maybe you haven't spent enough time around Boston sports fans. And I don't mean to paint them, you know, in a bad way or anything, because I do think, you know, the people that I spoke to, like I said, were genuinely you thought it was a good gesture and liked this form of, if you call it an apology, but it is very, very hard for that Boston fan to see anything outside of their fandom.
I'll be perfectly honest. I have a problem with that kind of tribalism, though. I really do.
But let's remember something else, too. One, it's not universally agreed upon that Boston even has a problem. That's why this has been going on for so long. I think you've got different segments of the fan base, and you've got different people deciding how they were going to react. And I think that, yeah, Megan, you're right. Is this tribalism unacceptable? Sure it is. But in that arena of battle, you know how we've created in the sports world it's like a war between these two teams, and it's really silly. It's just a game, but people buy into this thing. It's my team against your team, and they get all amped up, and it really is something that is not easy for fans to do. Obviously, this is something that if you don't care about it, if you're not a sports fan, that you say, "Come on, really, guys? You can't."
Listen, I'm a sports fan, Howard, and I say, come on, guys. You know, one at bat, one moment. You can't just let him have that. And you know, also, though, you don't want it to be just one moment, one at bat. You want it to be something that has long-range, you know, repercussions. And you know, Meghna, you mentioned about the possibility of a lifetime ban. Mm. And what I like to see coming out of this is Adam Jones is really – wants to be on the forefront of stiffer penalties against fans. And his agent came out earlier today and spoke about that. Not only are they advocating, this is something we talked about previously, but not only are they advocating for that lifetime ban, but monetary fines. These fines, I know, Howard, you were saying they may seem extreme, but I'm right there with you. They need to be extreme to have a deterrent effect at this point, because I don't think a year ban does anything.
Right.
No, I don't think a year ban does anything anyway, especially when you look at the prices at the ballpark. How many people go to multiple games anyway?
Exactly.
And so there's that, but there's also something else there too, which is that the subject matter that we're discussing, we're talking about race in America, which is one of the more difficult things for anyone to agree upon in the first place, and certainly one of the most difficult things for anyone to take responsibility for. So I think that the hard part with all of this when it comes to demanding something from the fans or even expecting anything from the fans is that most fans are there to be entertained.
Mm-hmm.
So even if you ask them to take any sort of social stand, we see this a lot when it comes to the military flyovers and the militarization of a lot of the sporting events these days, post 9/11, post Boston Marathon, that in that case, yes, they don't view that necessarily as going out of their way, because it's easy to think at least that you're on the right side of that issue. But something like racism, whether you're dealing with it in soccer in Europe or whether you're dealing with race in Boston here, you're going to get a lot of resistance just from the standpoint from people saying, hey, it's not me, so it's not my problem.
Yeah,
and there's a whole other atmosphere that sort of happens in the ballpark. I mean, you saw that in the first inning itself when, you know, you have this one moment of, you know, mostly unity, where fans were on their feet and cheering Adam Jones. And then moments later, you have Chris Sale throwing at Machado a 98-mile-per-hour fastball behind him, you know, at knee high. And, you know, Machado was incensed afterwards. I mean, this was, you know, he had this expletive-laden rant. I mean, that may even be putting it mildly. I think he had
43 F-balls.
Right? exactly. And so you have this happening, you know, within, like, what, 5-10 minutes of, you know, not the rant, but the actions on the part of the pitcher. And so you begin to see the atmosphere that's within the ballpark, that heightened atmosphere, all the emotion, and it's just a different world in some way.
Yeah,
exactly.
Let's not forget, you got the hyped up emotion, you got these two teams fighting for first place, you've got the fact that they're battling and throwing the ball at each other anyway, because Mookie Betts got hit the night before. This whole thing happened with Adam Jones. And then on top of that, let's not forget the level of alcohol. Luckily, we're in the first inning, but as things get more and more and more intense, people do turn into the sports, and they have this sort of gladiator thing where it's like they feel like they're part of the battle too, and it's not just sort of entertainment, and it really can get out of hand unless you pay close attention.
But this question of alcohol is a really interesting one, because doesn't that again get to the point where, you know, if the truth comes out when you get sauced up enough, what does that truth say about Boston?
Exactly right. And
bingo,
that's
yeah.
the reason why one of the things that bothered me most about this was sort of the other fan reaction, which was, well, you know, the media is out to get us, the country's out to get us. We saw this with Tom Brady and Spygate and Deflategate, and now this is another example of, you know, us against the world. And what that does is that completely obscures what's really happening, that you've got a real societal issue here, and that the people in the city have had to deal with it. And if you're from the city, you've had to deal with it even longer. And you don't want that to be, conflated with some ridiculous, you know, my team versus your team thing. The issue is much more important.
And you don't want alcohol to become an excuse for that behavior.
Absolutely.
I mean, listen,
exactly.
We know that
the
there were 30. Serum. Yeah, exactly. We know that there were 34 ejections. 20 of those were alcohol related. But that should not obscure the fact that this happened or excuse it in any way. And I think the really interesting thing will be, you know, what happens in the next week or 2 weeks or a month from now. I mean, I hope the Red Sox are serious about, one, the investigation, but two, about a stricter policy. Let's see if that comes to fruition.
Yeah. I was going to say, sure, there's one other thing that we didn't talk about yesterday and didn't get there today, which is another reason why the Red Sox want to be out in front of this, and that is, you are in a competitive marketplace, and do you really want to go back to the days where black players were going to have it written into their contracts that they don't want to go to Boston?
Yeah.
The money has gotten past that, because if you're going to pay David Price $217 million, okay, he'll go play on the moon for that, but do you want to open that up again, where you've got people saying, you know what, I don't want to play for your team because of all of this stuff.
Yeah, you're absolutely right. I mean, you want black players to feel welcome in Boston. And I can't help remember sort of shifting a little bit to the Celtics. I think it was this past offseason, right, that Jay Crowder was upset that the Celtics were courting a white player, Gordon Hayward. So, you know, you have these dynamics at play where you want black players to feel welcome here, and they don't always feel that.
Yeah. Well, since you did mention the Celtics, and I promised listeners at the top that we would talk about the bad and the great of Boston sports that we saw last night, just to remind folks, Isaiah Thomas, 53 points. And how many of those were in the fourth quarter?
Fourth quarter and overtime, 29.
Amazing, right?
Crazy.
And his sister just passing away last month.
It was his sister's birthday. I mean, on top of that, you know, he's had dental surgery. I mean, that was not the most amazing part, but I'm thinking to myself, the guy spent, I think, 4 hours on Monday in the dentist chair with oral surgery, and then he had to go back to the hospital.
Yeah. You know, Sherrod, let me just jump in here, because we do have a little bit of tape of Thomas talking after the game about the fact that he did this for his sister. Here he is.
It's my sister. It's her birthday today. Happy birthday. She would have been 23 today. So everything I do is for her, and she's watching over me. So that's all her.
I could hear that all day long. I mean, incredible. I mean, tell me more about Thomas, because first of all, you know, Sean Bowden, our producer here, keeps telling me, you got to talk about the fact that he's only 5'9", but he's pouring in all these points.
Hey, I come from a family of short people. So, you know what we say? It's not the size of the dog in the fight. It's the size of the fight in the dog. That's a Mark Twain-ism. You know, and I think that's part of the appeal, though, right, Howard? I mean, in the sense that you've got this 5'9 guy taking on players who are a foot or more taller than him and beating them and dominating the play and setting the tone. And then you have this tremendous backstory. Like, I'm a believer that players and teams bond, like players become the face of their franchise, not necessarily because they are the best player, but because you have these moments, whether it's, you know, these whether it's in the playoffs or in the regular season, where you see something about their character come through.
Right.
And then this is what you're seeing here happen now in this 2 week or so stretch with Isaiah Thomas. You're seeing a very special guy who played every game of the first round series after his sister's death, went home to her funeral,
yeah.
then came back. I mean, it was like a 36-hour turnaround to play in game one against the Wizards in the second round. So people are not just seeing what he does on the floor, but he is really showing something about his character and the way that he's handled all of that. And I think that the people of Boston have really fallen in love not only with his play, but who he is. And this is a guy, I think, if you're the Celtics, you want to keep on this team long term, pay the big bucks, not just because of what he does on the court, but because of what he represents.
Howard, your thoughts?
Yeah, no question. And I feel like, depending on how old you are, you remember when the Boston Celtics were imperious. You remember when the Boston Celtics didn't even advertise because in the 1980s, the Garden was sold out for the entire decade during the Larry Bird years. And you remember when everybody feared the Celtics except maybe the Lakers, and that
maybe.
They were on top of everything. Maybe. Exactly. And so the new Celtics are the Celtics that are in a competitive environment where they still have never gotten a black free agent in his prime to choose to play for Boston. Usually the great players here have to get traded, like Kevin Garnett and Ray Allen. And now you've got this player who's not even 6 foot tall, who has the name of one of your greatest enemies.
Yeah, exactly.
which is just incredible. And the beauty of the Thomas story is it's a big man's game, so we say, and that there's no way that a 5'9 guy is going to be able to dominate and be able to take you to a championship, because it really hasn't happened. Even the great Isaiah Thomas, who's probably the greatest, shortest player of all time, really couldn't get there until Steph Curry. Steph Curry, 6'3".
Okay.
And
relative.
So relative, exactly. And so when you start to look at what he's doing, he's not just carrying the team as he did last night and as he's done all season, but he's also representing an identity, which is the new Celtic identity, which is not an imperious team, but really a team of kind of underdogs.
Yeah,
They're an ensemble cast. And ensemble casts really do not win NBA championships. You need a LeBron James or a Kobe or a Bird or a Kevin Garnett and a Paul Pierce. You need those super, superstars. And what he's doing is he's creating an element, a dynamic that we haven't really seen in Boston in a long time, if ever.
And it's fun to watch, man.
It's really fun to watch.
Well, Howard Bryant is senior writer for ESPN and NPR correspondent. Howard, thank you so much for joining us again today. It was great to have you back.
My pleasure.
And Shira Springer, WBUR Sports and Society reporter. It's so great to have you always, Shira. And I'm glad we got to end on this happy note about greatness in Boston sports.
Yes.
So thank you.
Thanks.
We'll be back. I'm Meghna Chakrabarty. This is Radio Boston.